Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. It is July 1st. This is program 297 in the series, and we have a two-hour show tonight. We're going to tune in to the Charlie McCarthy Show to start things off from 1947. Then it's Hercule Poirot, the Belgium detective from 1945. So we have a comedy and a detective show. And we will also be talking with Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Oil Dry, parent company of Cat's Pride, and also Dave Weiske, the vice president of customer success, will be giving away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter in just a few minutes. But right now, Lisa, we're going to play our game sponsored by Cat's Pride. It's called Crack the Quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Into the Wild.
All right.
2007.
Yeah, well, what do they win?
They're going to win a Never Measure, the prize that is so coveted here on WGN Radio Theater.
A Never Measure. All right, 312-981-7200. What caller?
We're going to go for caller 8.
Caller 8. Call right now. We'll play the game on the air. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have James on the line with us. Hi, James. Where do we have James? Please, we need James.
I put him on. All right, is he there?
How are you?
There he is. There he is. How are you?
All right.
I'm here.
Good, we're glad you're with us. You ready to play the game?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Terrific. All right. The movie is Into the Wild.
Ma'am.
Terrific.
All right. Here we go.
Quote number one.
All right.
Why do you insist on making life so complicated? I say that to Carl all the time. Number two. Do you think no one finds life worth living? Number three. Don't you think you ought to be getting a job and making something of this life? What do you think, James?
What do you think, James? One, two, or three? All right.
Well, you tell me, Carl, and we'll get back to it.
Number one.
Right, number one. All right, Carl.
Number one.
Okay. Carl wants number two.
Number one.
Got it. All right. Let's hear it.
Don't you think you ought to be getting a job and making something of this life?
All right.
Three.
Well, it was number three, but you guys are both so close that you are still a winner, James, and you have won a Never Measure. You can easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast. Eliminate the need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. It is veteran-owned, made in the USA. You can get yours at nevermeasure.com. Congratulations, James. Thanks so much for calling in and playing with us.
Thanks, James. All right, James is a big winner. Let's bring in our guests. We have Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Oil Dry, parent company to Cat's Pride, and Dave Weiske, vice president of customer success. And what's up, gentlemen? How are you?
Great. We love the new digs.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you in our new home here.
What do you think? Nice? You
very
like?
Very nice.
Yeah, we're 18 floors up, but I miss the walking traffic outside. That's the only sad part. Can you put like a tram up here where people can just...
We could bring a drone up and you can look at the people. We have Mike Estella's here as well. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how's it going?
So let's talk a little bit about Cat's Pride. And how about we talk about the white jug? Because there's not only the green jug, which we always talk about, but there's also a white jug. And I want our listeners to understand what that is.
Absolutely, because, you know, there's always the concept of good, better, best. And the green jug is the best, and we all know that, and we've talked about it enough. But the white jugs, they clump very well. They control odors very well. But they're not going to break your piggy bank. So what we do is we don't mass market them. We keep the prices very competitive. And it's called even OPP, opening price point. So when you see it at Walmart or in grocery, oftentimes it's on deal in grocery. At Walmart, it is everyday low priced at literally about 20% below Tidy Cats. Mm. So it's okay. And it works very well. So
right.
it's you know, in my mind, it's like a Ford Taurus. It's a great car, and you get a lot for your money. A
lot of gas mileage out of that Ford Taurus.
And, you know, the other thing, and this is the beauty of Cat's Pride Scoop, this is the original, I mean, this is the lightweight litter we started with. And literally, it is 50% lighter as well, up to 50% lighter. So you're getting the value of a lightweight litter with all the key attributes that Dan had mentioned.
Very, very good.
So I'm thinking, okay, so it's scoopable, it's lightweight, it comes in a great jug, it's Cat's Pride. What are we missing?
Look for the pink cap.
No, I mean in terms of
white
the
jug,
product.
Pink cap?
Well, do you want me to compare it to the green jug?
Well, I just want to make sure, I mean, that, you know, it's doing all these great things, but yet it's a cheaper price point. I want to make sure that it's everything that, you know, that I need in a cat litter.
Well, first of all, because of the price point, it is our highest rated cat litter. Because, you know, when you buy a Taurus, you expect it to be a good, solid car, but you don't expect to have all the bells and whistles of a luxury automobile. So when people spend more money on a litter, guess what? They expect more out of a litter, and rightly so. So when you look at the consumer feedback on Cat's Pride Scoopable, it is unbelievably positive. I was just talking to our VP of manufacturing this week, and he came over from Unilever and Procter & Gamble. He said they didn't have any products that scored this high. I mean, it really, really is off the charts.
Now, where can they get the white jug or the green jug?
Well, it's pretty much in almost everywhere. Our density is extremely strong. Walmart, as Dan had mentioned, Publix, CVS. Here's a name that, you know, you value shoppers will know. It's Big Lots. Big Lots were a big player with them. They used to be closeout, but this is a regular item. We carry in Big Lots. Online, you can get it at Walmart.com and at Amazon and Chewy and also Roundy's Piggly Wiggly here locally.
Well, I want to say this. Now, Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Oil Dry, they have been our main sponsor of the WGN Radio Theater from day one. Now, we've been on the air over 3 years. They have been with us, locked and loaded with us from day one. And, folks, if you enjoy this radio show and obviously you love your kitty, we would like you to marry the two. You know what? Support this show. And one of the ways you support this show is if you can switch. If you're not using Cat's Pride, we really urge you to do that because they're our sponsor. They're a great company. They support and love old-time radio. Dan's a big old-time radio fan. He has tons of classic radio CDs. He's a big fan. We ask you, I urge you, please switch over to Cat's Pride because of the loyalty they have to the show, and we want to make them happy as well.
Well, I'm going to switch to the white jug. I'm going to give it a try. I've actually never tried it. I'm not going to switch over because of the loyalty. I'm going to switch over because I want to try the product. So I'm just saying, but I will get back to you because I have never tried the white jug. I have used the green jug. I currently have it right now. So I look forward to trying it and reporting back next month.
Great.
And I'll do one more challenge for your listeners because they might say, hey, you know, I didn't hear you mention Target. I didn't hear you mention Dollar General, Meijer, places where they may shop and where we have the green jug, some of them we don't. But we do make the private label lightweight for all of those customers and actually for 80% of the customers in the United States. So that means when you go in and get the Up and Up brand at Target, we've made that for them, and you're getting the quality. You're getting the price point. Same thing, Meijer's own brand, Publix. We could go on and on. Dollar General now, when you buy their 5-pound lightweight, which is the same size and the same price as their 10-pound heavyweight, we make that for them.
Yeah.
So we're happy if you pick up their brand or you pick up our brand.
Well, it's real simple. Cat's Pride. We want you to switch over and try the white jug green jug.
I'm going to do it.
And the other thing that Dan and Dave do at Cat's Pride is they give away to one of our listeners a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter every single month, which is so generous. They come in here as they are right now, and they pick a name out of a hat. And all you have to do to enter for next month, folks, is send a picture of your kitty cat along with your cat's name, your city, and state, and email it to us at catspridephoto@gmail.com. Now, we have hundreds and hundreds of entries every month, but you know what? Somebody wins. Somebody wins, as we're going to demonstrate right now. So drum roll, please.
Okay. Jamie Manrique, would you say, or Manriquez?
Yeah, Manriquez.
Maybe Manriquez. Her cat is Flynn, and they're both from Chicago, Illinois.
All right,
and they have
there
just won
go.
A year's supply.
Year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, which is a fantastic prize, especially if you have a cat.
Absolutely. And look, we want to thank you guys. My Q score has been rocketing. For those of you who don't know, that's like your public awareness score because of this show. I can't tell you how many people stop me and say, hey, I heard you on WGN
Radio.
Oh, that's
fantastic.
It happens all the time.
Fantastic.
So
well, Dan, we can't thank you enough. We really appreciate the support and loyalty and just our partnership here with the WGN Radio Theater. And do switch over, folks. And look for Cat's Pride in all your favorite stores. It's also available at Amazon and what's the other?
Chewy,
yeah,
and
Chewy.
As well as Walmart.com. And
all
the
right.
great thing is I think we just gave away, this is over 3 years
yeah.
Of continued cat litter.
Yeah.
It's equivalent of 36 years of cat litter. So that's pretty awesome.
Not bad. We love it. Thank you very, very much.
Yes.
All right. Well,
and it's great to have you here
yeah,
today
yeah.
at our
and
new
we'll
studio.
And we'll see you guys in a month to give away another year's supply.
Nice new joint here.
All righty. Thanks, guys. All right. Time now for the Charlie McCarthy Show. Let's go back to a broadcast date of February 23rd, 1947. Someone wants to adopt Charlie McCarthy. Here's part one of the Charlie McCarthy Show.
Of Chase and Sanborn Coffee bring you the Charlie McCarthy Show. This is Ken Carpenter, ladies and gentlemen, greeting you on behalf of Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Ray Noble and his orchestra, Anita Gordon, Mortimer Snerd, Pat Patrick, and our guests for this evening, Nelson Eddy and Elsa Maxwell. And here's Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Boy, what a letter. And then she says, Dear Charlie, I listen to you every Sunday, and I think you're adorable. Oh, I am not. Well, maybe a little.
What's that you're reading, Charlie? I noticed my name mentioned there.
Yes, it is, yes.
Yeah. Let me see that letter.
Okay, nosy. But I warn you, Bergen, this is going to shake you to your very foundation garment.
Oh, now, please. Who's this? Well, who's this letter from?
It's from a very rich old lady.
Oh.
Yeah. Who wants to adopt little old me.
Yeah. Adopt you?
Uh-huh. She's awful rich, too.
Yeah. Well, remember, Charlie, money is the root of all evil.
Well, that's all right. I got an evil mind.
No. I wonder if she makes a habit of adopting people.
Well, oh, no, you don't. Oh, no. You don't chisel in on this one, brother. You're not her type, anyway.
Oh, is that so?
No, yeah.
Well, let's read what she says about me.
Right there, it says.
Oh, yes. How can Mr. Bergen be so stingy with your allowance?
Yeah.
I should think he'd hide his head in shame.
How can you hide anything that shiny?
Oh, no. I see. Then she goes on. You poor, overworked slave.
That's me.
Yeah. I want to help you escape the clutches of that cold-hearted Fagin.
Yeah. Did you get that, Fagin? I mean, Bergen?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen to this, too. I'll not only name one of my banks after you, but I'll give you the combination to the vault.
Wow. How's that? With that kind of dough, I can not only look the whole world in the face, but I can spit in its eye.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I suppose you think you could better yourself with her?
Well, natch, sure. What am I now? Nothing. I'm just a ventriloquist assistant. There's only one thing worse than that.
What's that?
Well, being a ventriloquist, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Finish the letter, bud, yeah.
You will have your own suite of rooms with a valet to wait on you.
Yeah. Now, that gives me an idea, Bergen.
Yeah.
You dig up good references, and the job is yours.
Yeah. We'll finish it here. She says, if you're interested, meet me at any of my conveniently located safety deposit boxes. Signed, Mrs. Morgan Built Astorfeller.
Well, it's your move, Bergen. Well, what do you say?
Well, it's a wonderful opportunity.
Sure.
I say, grab it.
What?
Yes.
Grab it?
Yes.
Ay, 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 ay. This thing ain't working out right at all.
Why, she's offering you much more than you can get now, you know. So what do you expect me to do?
Open your purse, Richard.
No, no, no. No, Charlie, I know when I'm outwitted.
Oh, I see. You sort of want... You want to think it over. You want to try and meet her offer, don't you?
No.
Don't you want to try and think it over?
No. No, Charlie, you go ahead. I don't want to try to stop you.
Not even try to slow me down a little?
No. No, you just can't pass up a chance like this.
Yeah, but it just wouldn't be right if I didn't give you a notice first. Oh, you must have a notice. Say about a 2-year notice, aren't you?
No, that won't be necessary.
But I just couldn't desert you, Bergen. You're too old to go to work.
No, I can always find some little, something.
Yeah, but will he work as hard for you as I do?
Well, we mustn't lose any time, Charlie.
No.
We'll phone her right now and tell her that you accept.
Yeah. And then, Mr. Bergen.
Yes, Charlie?
I gotta confess something.
Yes.
I wrote that letter.
You did?
Yeah.
You wrote the letter?
Yeah. Ain't I a stinker?
Well, it's about time you owned up to it. The minute I saw that handwriting, I was wise to you.
And you let me go through all this rigmarole? I just wanted to see how big a fool you could make of yourself. Why, you sneaky thing. I ought to clip you, so help me, I ought to mow you down.
All right, all right. Well, you see, Charlie, this is one little scheme of yours that didn't work.
Well,
there are lots more where this one came from. Yes, I...
His orchestra play the all-time favorite, and Nobody's Baby, with lovely Anita Gordon on the vocal.
That's the first portion of the Edgar Bergen Charlie McCarthy show from 1947. Hope you are enjoying that. We'll have more of it in just a few minutes, but let's take a very short break.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Welcome back to the show. It is 1:34. Great job, as always, Roger and Esmeralda. And in this part of the show, it's the conclusion to Charlie McCarthy. When we come back after the midnight news, we will have a half-hour episode of Hercule Poirot, the Belgium detective. You're going to like it, Lisa.
You almost sound, have a little foreign accent there.
Hercule Poirot.
Yes.
He kind of sounds like these.
Like an inspector.
Yeah, and like Inspector Clouseau.
Exactly.
All right, well, right now it's the conclusion to the Charlie McCarthy Show.
Well, Mortimer,
yep.
You and I meet again.
Yeah. I thought we looked awful familiar.
Yes, I've been looking every place for you.
Well, don't worry. I must be around someplace.
Yeah.
You see, Mortimer, I need a babysitter.
Yeah.
Did anybody ever ask you to sit?
Well, a fellow told me once to go and sit on a tack.
Yeah. Not safe. No. You see, Mrs. Bergen and I are going out tonight.
Yeah.
And the baby's nurse is off.
No.
And Charlie won't be home.
No.
Yeah. So you're all I have left.
Hmm. Leaves pretty near nothing, don't it?
Yes, it does. Now, I know I can rely on you, Mortimer, because you're eminently trustworthy.
No, I'm Emily's nerd. that ain't right neither, though. Something wrong there.
Yeah. Well, as you know, we have a little baby.
Yeah.
Born last year.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it a boy? A boy, or is it a... Or is it a... To ain't that disgusting. Can't think of that other kind. You know, the silly kind.
Yeah.
Oh, you must remember our little girl. Candace.
Yeah,
that's right. So you see, Mortimer, she has to be watched constantly.
Oh. Suspicious character.
No. No, Mortimer, you know how it is. You were a baby yourself once, don't you remember?
See. No. That was before my time.
No. Now, let me tell you about this. Now, if the baby gets hungry...
Yeah.
Then what do you do?
Put a saucer of milk out for her?
No. No, you give her bottle.
Her bottle.
Yeah. But after that... After she's had her milk, then don't jiggle her.
No. She might spill over.
No. And if she cries, try singing to her.
No, nothing doing. I'd rather listen to her crying.
Yeah.
Oh.
Smart Alex. All right. Now, if she won't stop crying, it's probably because, she wants a change of clothes.
Dressy kid, huh?
Yeah. And above all, don't go to sleep on the job. Now, let's see. What could you do to keep awake?
Well, see, I'll play checkers with her.
No, not with an 8-month-old baby.
Well, I guess you're right. She'd probably beat the tar out of me. Yeah.
No, Mortimer, I give up. Yes. Time after time, I say to myself, Mortimer just can't be that stupid.
Hard fellow to convince, ain't you?
Yes, I am.
Mr. Bergen, why are you so dressed up?
Well, Anita, I'm expecting a member in good standing of the Local 400.
What's that, the Ventriloquist Union?
No. No, our guest tonight is a lady who is very prominent in the social world.
Well, what's she doing here?
Slumming? No, I want you to remember Miss Elsa Maxwell is a worldwide figure.
Well, she is on the globular side.
Now, I want you both to watch your behavior. After all, we don't want her to think that we're social nobodies.
Well, what's the plot, Bergen? How are we going to fool her?
Oh, don't worry about me, Mr. Bergen. I'll be a perfect little lady.
Well, in that case, you better get off my lap.
Yeah. Now, what are you going to say when she comes in?
Well, let's see. I'll say, oh, how do you do? It's beastly good to see you, really, it is.
And I'll say, Mrs. Tutu Divine, let me focus my lorgnette on you.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say, Elsa, I have lived for this moment.
Shh, here she comes, here she comes. Hello, Edgar and Charlie.
Well, Elsa Maxwell, hello.
Miss Maxwell, how good of you to honor us with your presence.
Thanks, Chuck. Let's cut out the Emily Post and get down to the Hitchin Post.
Yeah, nothing personal there, is that?
No, no. Well, tell us about yourself, Elsa.
Oh, let me catch my breath. Oh, what a day. I've dined, I've motored, I've bridged, I've...
Yeah, yeah, I'm a little poop, too. I've parcheesied and spitballed and bubblegummed.
Well, I attended a luncheon here yesterday. There must have been 50 people there.
Oh, what a pity.
Yes, I got stuck with a check.
Wow.
My Elsa, how you do get around. We hear of you in Europe, and then it's New York, and now it's California.
Jeepers, aren't you afraid to travel so much all alone?
Yeah, think what might happen to you.
Yes, isn't it thrilling?
Well, what did your husband say about all this gadding about?
I don't have a husband.
You don't have... Well, who do you fight with?
That doesn't seem fair. Miss Maxwell is always making people happy by holding so many parties and...
Yeah, it's about time you got a party to hold you. Oh, poor Miss Maxwell. Anita, let's do something about it, huh?
Why, there's no reason why Miss Maxwell can't get a husband.
The woods are full of men.
Well, I'm afraid my hunting license has expired.
Oh, I don't know. Just think what it would mean to have a home and happiness and maybe someday alimony.
Edgar, what do you think is the best technique for a girl to use to win a husband?
Well, Elsa, a man likes to feel superior, so why don't you try and act shy and innocent?
I don't want to win a husband through deception. I'd rather win him the other way.
What other way?
Well, it's very important to flatter a man.
Why?
Well, you gotta give him something.
Naturally, it goes without saying that you've got to play hard to get.
But I don't want to play hard to get. I just want to play.
Elsa, are you promiscuous, sissies?
Gracious, no.
No.
I only let a man kiss me on rare occasions.
And what do you call a rare occasion?
When a man kisses me.
Sounds fair enough. Yeah. Well, we'll find you a man. We'll find you a man.
Oh, isn't that Nelson Eddy?
Yeah, that gives me an idea. Romance is beckoning like it never beckoned before. Oh, Mr. Eddy, Nelson Eddy.
Yeah, Charlie.
Mr. Eddy, allow me to introduce Miss Maxwell. A lonely girl in a big city.
Well, one can be very lonesome in a big city.
Oh, Mr. Eddy, you need someone. Someone to be waiting with outstretched hands when you come home from work.
But I already have an agent.
Couldn't we go somewhere where we might be alone? I'd like to tell you about my hopes. My dreams,
and her telephone number. She just loves flowers.
What kind do you like, Miss Maxwell?
Well, orange blossoms would be nice. Don't they remind you of, shall we say, marriage?
That's it.
Oh, now I catch on. The marriage of Figaro. Figaro,
Mr. Ray. I'm afraid you missed the point.
Nelson, we were telling Miss Maxwell what our idea of a dream girl should be. Now, I said she must be intelligent and charming.
Well, my dream girl must be a music lover and know her opera.
Reedy Pagliacci! Reedy Pagliacci! You're trying too hard. Bless your heart.
Oh, Charlie, he walked away. I guess it's no use.
Well, I think you were too subtle.
What else could I do?
Well, you could have hit him over the head with a bag of rice.
Well, let me try that again on some other man.
Yeah, some other man, yeah. Yeah. Say, how about Ray Noble? Didn't take long to get to the bottom of the barrel, did it? Well, I'll admit he's not much of a ladies' man.
So what? I'm not much of a lady. I'll be able to work something out.
Oh, I say, I think I heard someone mention Ray Noble. That's quite apt to be me, don't you know?
Makes sense. Not very much, though. Ray, Miss Maxwell and I have been talking about home and happiness, haven't we?
Oh, Mr. Noble, don't you just love home-cooked meals?
Yes, I do, and I know a charming little restaurant that serves them.
Charming. Hmm? Let's put our cards on the table.
Okay.
Mr. Noble, do you know what a bridegroom is?
Oh, isn't it one of those things they have at weddings or something?
Yes, it is. And we're going to have a wedding here.
Oh, how jolly. Could I stay and watch?
Yes. And if you're a nice fellow, we may even give you a speaking part.
Yeah.
Do you read lines?
I do.
That's the line.
Oh, Mr. Noble, I could just crush you in my arms.
I bet you could at that.
Ray.
Oh, no, please, Noble. Madam, no, please, release me. You must get a hold of yourself.
Yes, let's both get hold of myself.
Oh, Charlie, look who I brought over, just in case, you know.
Oh, yeah. A crayon. My name is Ursula Twing, and, that's right, quite right. And I join people in matrimony. Yes. You see, I am the justice of the peace.
Oh, you
and,
are?
Well, no, I'm not exactly that either, because there is nothing peaceful about matrimony.
What's the matter? What's the matter? Aren't your relations pleasant?
Well, yes, mine are, but my wife's are terrible.
Well, that's neither here nor there. What do you charge, Bud?
Well, for $2, I can let you have the single ring, the double ring, or a nice fresh coffee ring. Young lady, are you the bride?
Yes, I'm going to take this man for better or for worse.
Oh, you are? Well, just as long as I get paid, you can take him for everything he's got. Now, who's the opponent?
The opponent?
Yes, the goon.
The
groom.
The groom. Yeah. Oh, this is it here.
Oh, all righty. Now, you stand there, and you stand over here. Get off my foot, please. Before I start the ceremony, I'll give you time to count to ten.
Count 10? What for?
Well, to give you time to come to your senses and call a toss.
Well, yes, you know, I was just thinking. We don't have to...
You're not supposed to think now, no.
Well, it's quite all right with me.
Oh, goody, goody.
But I think my wife will be just a trifle put out when I bring you home.
Why, Charlie, why didn't you tell me he was married, you mahogany midget?
No, you didn't ask me, you Park Avenue blimp. You
out of my sight. Out of my sight, you little shade green grown stinker.
This week is National Brotherhood Week, a time when we of America reaffirm our faith in the rights of individuals and in human dignity. Regardless of race or creed, we pledge ourselves to work together, to observe the rights of our fellow men as firmly as we demand our own, to substitute tolerance for prejudice. The spirit of brotherhood, tolerance, cooperation, teamwork inspired this special week, and everybody is glad to help out. But the purpose, the aim of National Brotherhood Week continues far beyond these 7 days. To stop there would be failure. So let's make National Brotherhood Week the success it deserves to be. Let's all make it the first week of 52 in a full brotherhood year.
Be sure and listen in next Sunday when Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Ray Noble, Anita Gordon, and Pat Patrick will welcome Nelson Eddy back, and Chester Morris will be our special guest. Week, when you're buying coffee, think of us and ask for Chase and Sanborn, the coffee with shade-grown flavor. This is Ken Carpenter speaking to you from Hollywood's Radio City.
That is the Edgar Bergen Charlie McCarthy Show, going back to February 23rd, 1947. Edgar Bergen Charlie McCarthy on that. And you know what, Lisa?
Why, Carl?
As I say, how do you know his lips weren't moving there? I mean,
we don't, but that's just how we see it.
I mean,
you know, he must have had an audience there, a live audience.
There was a live audience.
So, I mean, we assume that he's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
But they're way far away.
You could see their lips moving.
I don't think you can see it.
I think his lips weren't moving.
You know, he probably was like, hey, maybe I'll do radio because
I can't really do it.
Nobody's going to know if my lips are moving.
I think he was an excellent ventriloquist.
No, he was fantastic. I mean, he was a great ventriloquist. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't the greatest at the lip thing, but the way he would do the voices talking to each other, I mean, to me, that's the art right there, where he's actually, he's talking to himself, right?
Right.
I mean, he's talking to, you know, you got, well, Edgar, yeah, Charlie, you know, how does he?
His voices are great, I mean, but you have me back at he's great at the lip thing.
He's probably not that great at the, he wasn't, because I've seen him, like, video of Edgar Bergen.
Yeah.
And I mean, he wasn't the greatest with the lips. I mean, you see some of these people now,
yeah.
You know, and you don't see their lips moving at all.
No, at all.
And his lips moved a little bit, but I think it's more in the art of how you were talking to, you know, talking to the dummy.
We're very forgiving that way because of the show that he puts on.
Yeah, I mean, he was an amazing, and he really was like a pioneer in this, right? I mean,
I think
there was never a ventriloquist on the radio.
Right.
Especially with the ratings. I mean, this show consistently was a top 10 show
every
single
year. And how many years was this on for?
Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy Show. Let me think about this for a second. I have my notes here, too. Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy Show. It started in 1936 and lasted until the 1950s.
Yeah.
So that's
a long
time on the radio. And I don't think he ever did a television show. I don't believe he ever did a television show, although there were many films. You know, there were films where he was part of the films, you know, like Look Who's Laughing and some of the other things. But Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, hope you enjoy that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. You know, the last couple days, it was really warm out there. I played baseball. And I was staying hydrated because I got to tell you know, it was hot as heck out there.
I didn't notice.
And you know where it also is going to be hot as heck?
In the Caribbean?
In the Caribbean.
All right.
The Eastern Caribbean. And I can't wait.
Well, when it's 0 degrees here in February, hot as heck sounes really good.
I wasn't able to finish what I was going to say. I was going to say, I cannot wait to see if you're as pale all over as you are on your face. Why don't you have a tan?
Are you talking about my legs? What body part are we speaking of?
Well, because you're going to be wearing some kind of a bathing suit, I'm thinking.
I'm thinking
are
I will.
Are you pale everywhere?
I am.
Why? You don't like the sun?
No, I'm like my skin is literally like see-through white.
Yeah, why?
That's how I was born.
You were born? No, but if you would get in the sun a little bit more, you'd get a little color.
Nope.
See my
color? It just turns red, pink, and then red, and then I burn, and then I worry about skin cancer and no good. So I stay white.
What about a spray tan?
My husband calls me Princess Pale Face.
Princess Pale Face. Yeah. What about a spray tan?
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
That I'll do.
So, folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, we are going to be taking a classic radio cruise to the Eastern Caribbean. We're going to visit St. Martin, which I've been to. Really nice. St. Thomas, I've been there also.
Me too.
And the Bahamas, been there also.
I haven't been to the Bahamas.
Yeah, Bahamas are cool. It's all cool. And then, but this is really special because it's on the largest ship in the sea, a passenger ship, that is. It's the largest passenger ship. It holds 6,000 passengers. It's like a city,
It's also a brand new ship. So it's very fancy and very beautiful. And not only is it special because of the ports we're going to and because the ship is so phenomenal, but it's a classic radio cruise. And Carl and I will both be there. So we are there to have fun and to meet you and to have fun together.
Yeah, we're going
to
eat with you. We're going to hang out with you. We're going to, you know, play cards if you
want. It's
going
to be a lot of Carl time, I'm just saying.
We're going to
we're going to swim and ice skate and see shows.
I don't ice skate.
I know, me neither, but we will.
Well, I'll attempt to do it.
That's right.
And there's the largest slide Like the largest slide in the world or something like that. We're going to do that too. But
it's called the Ultimate Abyss. It's the world's tallest water slide at sea. It's 10 stories high. And there's...
Are you kidding
me?
No, I'm not
kidding.
10 stories you slide down a slide?
Yes.
Wow.
All right.
I'm going to do it.
But the thing about this is you can be as active or not. I mean, you can hang around at the pool and play some cards and
eat.
Go to the library and eat, or
you
can
eat
go
like
explore.
24 hours a day.
I know.
And plus, there's a casino too.
There's a casino. Yeah,
I'm
going to
be there.
And there's a casino, and it's just very exciting. So we hope that you'll look into it. Kelly Cruises is our travel partner, so we have to do it through them. And you can check them out at kellycruises.com or give them a call at 630-990-1111. We hope that you'll look into it and cruise with us. I'm going to give you the number one more time, 630-990-1111. That's Kelly Cruises.
Right, and if you call the number, like tonight, it's okay. You can leave your return phone number, and someone from Kelly Cruises will call you. It's a limited booking, so yep, this is going to go fast. So we hope that if you're interested in cruising with us, which is February 16th through the 23rd of 2019,
right,
so next February, I think it's President's Weekend,
it's
right? President's Day weekend, right?
It is.
All right, so cruise with us. And we're also going to have, like, all kinds of events around classic radio. In fact, we're going to do some trivia contests with prizes. We're going to have an audition to win a role in a radio drama. We're going to do two radio
dramas.
I'm going
to audition, too, so I'll be right there with you.
Yeah, so we'll be on stage with you. It'll be a lot of fun. And then, of course, we're going to do excursions, all kinds of fun stuff, plus dining together all the time. Hang out by the pool. We're going to eat together.
And we're going to get spray tans.
Yeah.
So, I can't think of anything better.
Yeah. We'll splash around in the pool together and just get to know our listeners. I think it's going to be really fun. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to do these at least every other year or something like that. But we have a biggie. It's our first one. It's our maiden cruise.
Yes, our maiden voyage.
And it is on an amazing ship. The ship is called the Symphony of the Seas.
Brand new.
Brand new ship. Largest ship in the passenger ship in the world. And to learn more about this, at least check it out. At least go to Kelly Cruises. Call this number, 630-990-1111. Or, really simple, you can just go to our website, WGN Radio Theater. If you go there, you'll see a pop-up. And that pop-up has kind of a lot about it. Just click it. It'll take you right to Kelly Cruises' website. They're our exclusive travel partner on this, so do check that out. All right, coming up in our next hour, we're going to tune into Hercule Poirot. I don't think we've ever aired one of these. There's very few of them that exist. Very few.
That's because nobody can pronounce it correctly.
I can.
Mm.
It's right. It's how you pronounce it. Hercule Poirot.
You might be right. I just wouldn't know.
I'm very confident that I'm right.
He watches PBS a lot. That's how they say it.
Do they?
Hercule Poirot. Yeah.
You know, people think he was a French detective, but he wasn't.
It was Belgium.
He was Belgium. I'm in France, though. That's the thing. But this is kind of cool. You're going to hear, you are actually going to hear, believe it or not, Roger, on this.
Yes.
You know, this was a detective character created by Agatha Christie, you know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the very beginning of the show, Agatha Christie talks via wire.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she talks at the beginning. So that's in our next hour. Don't miss that.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks, Esmeralda. All right, this is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater, and it is officially Monday morning, July 2nd.
It is, and happy 4th of July week, because we won't be with you until after 4th of July, so we hope you have a happy and safe Independence Day.
You know, last year, I think you're correct on this,
Thanks,
Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
I believe we got the call. The phone rang.
Yeah.
We answered
it. Well, we got a text anyways.
Well, it's metaphorically
correct.
I know.
They asked us to do a 4th of July show last year.
We did a 4th of July show.
We did. I remember that.
I wonder if we're going to get the call.
I kind of got out of going to fireworks, which to me was pleasing at the moment.
I believe we did a special show during the week.
We did.
Taking somebody's shift.
We
played some classic radio shows.
We didn't get that call
and
this
if
week.
If that happens, we'll be happy to do it.
We haven't heard anything toward that end.
So I'm guessing it's not happening.
Probably not.
But if it did, we would do it.
We're the yes man.
Yeah, we love being on the air here playing these classic radio shows.
We just pretty much always say yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
The answer is yes.
Yes.
Yes. And we don't hesitate.
Yes.
Because we love what we do. We love doing this. We love playing these shows. All right. Well, in this hour, we have Hercule Poirot.
Sound very smart.
Don't I? 1945.
It's a facade.
Harold Huber is the star of that show. There's an interesting picture of Harold Huber up on our Facebook page. We put pictures of these stars.
We do pit-put them.
Pit-put. It's like Brad Pitt.
Same thing.
And his brother Armpit.
Right. It's the same. Pit put.
His brother Arm.
I didn't hear you. We should probably say it one more time.
His brother Arm.
Oh, I got it now.
Got it?
Yeah.
We put pictures up.
We do.
Yeah.
You have to check out our Facebook page at WGN Radio Theater. Make sure to like us and check out our fun fact and our photos and our schedule. They're all posted.
Yeah. Harold Huber. He used to be, I mean, he was like a sort of a supporting actor in movies. And he was chosen because he had a very good accent. He had a very good kind of Belgium/French accent. Did a great job as Hercule Poirot. We'll have that in just a moment for you from 1945. But right now it's time to play our game. It's sponsored by Cat's Pride, our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. It's called Crack the Quote. What's the movie?
It Happened One Night.
Oh,
1934.
Yeah. Claudette Colbert and Clark Gable.
There you go.
Won Best Picture.
Well,
very
maybe
funny
you'll
movie.
Get this one. You
the
haven't
walls
gotten one right in a while.
Of Jericho. Is that in the quote anywhere?
I'm so sorry.
No? Yeah.
But you haven't gotten one right in a while.
Roger
so
knows what I'm talking about, right, Roger? The Walls of Jericho.
The Walls of Jericho.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, come tumbling down.
Yeah, the Walls of Jericho.
Yeah.
Are you familiar what I mean by in the movie It Happened One Night with the Walls of Jericho?
You know, I haven't seen that movie in about 6-7 years.
There's a scene in the movie where, you know, they're traveling together.
Right.
And they, of course, fall in love at the end. But they're traveling together and they have to share a hotel room.
Right. And they put up the
Walls of Jericho.
Right.
They call it. He puts the thing up and he calls it the Walls of Jericho.
See, and I knew the scene before you even mentioned it. I knew they were sharing the room and it was awkward.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that line.
How about when he's trying to hitchhike and he can't get anyone to pull over. But
right.
Then she lifts
and she
her
pulls
leg,
up her,
her stocking and puts her leg out there and all the cars like,
yeah.
Great movie. All right, well, what is the prize,
Lisa? We're going to give a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers. I know you do.
312-981-7200. We'll have the fifth caller. 312-981-7200. Call us now. Play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. We're glad we got you on the line, and we're going to do some Crack the Quote. You ready to go?
I'm going to do my best.
Excellent. Quote number one. I have two speeds, hostile or smart aleck. Number two. You're such a smart aleck, nobody knows anything but you. Number three. I reckon I am a smart aleck. It's a way to pass the time.
Hmm. What do you think, Linda?
It was. The question. I thought it was going to be related to the movie.
One of them is correct. One of them is a quote from the movie. You're going to just try to guess.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to get. Well, maybe I could get it, okay, but I didn't understand how it was set up. So
that's
could I
okay.
Hear again?
Sure, I'll do it one more time. Number one, number one, I have two speeds, hostile or smart aleck. Number two, you're such a smart aleck, nobody knows anything but you. Number three, I reckon I am a smart aleck. It's a way to pass the time.
Oh, I'm going to go with two.
Number two, you're such a smart aleck.
I like her the way she thinks.
You like number
really?
Two?
Yeah.
I think it's definitely not two. I think it's either one.
It's three.
I think it's one or three.
Well guys.
Come on,
you gotta pick one.
All right, I'm going to go with one.
One is I Have Two Speeds. Okay, let's hear it.
Oh, you're such a smart aleck. Nobody knows anything but you.
It's number two.
Yeah!
She got it right, and it's the one you said it wasn't.
Right.
You
she
got
was
it.
Right.
Linda, you're on it. Don't listen to Carl. You're the winner, and you've won a desktop indoor weather station.
You know, I stink at this game.
You know, that's why Carl's not winning the American Weather Makers weather station, because he can't get these right. But you are the winner. They are brought to you by American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. Congratulations. You are going to love your desktop indoor weather station.
I just have to face the facts. I stink at this game. I just stink.
You know what? I just saw the movie recently.
Oh.
It sounded familiar.
Isn't that funny that it just sounded right?
Way to go, Linda. Way to go, Linda. Great job. Great job, Linda.
Thank you for playing.
All right. You're welcome. She did a great job. She got it right. All right. Time now for Hercule Poirot, detective series created by Agatha Christie. Hercule Poirot is a Belgium detective who rivaled Sherlock Holmes in detection. He fled Belgium during the First World War and became a fixture in England, often providing aid to the British government. He stood a whopping 5'2".
It's about like you.
He was immaculately dressed, obsessive, compulsive, brilliant, egotistical, and compassionate.
Sounds like someone I know.
Someone you know?
5'2"?
First heard on radio in 1939. No, I'm not quite 5'2".
You're similar to.
And by 1945, Harold Huber was starring as Poirot in a mutual series. By 1946, it became a Monday through Friday 15-minute serial. But right now, it is time for Hercule Poirot. A good broadcast from May 3rd, 1945. It's called Murder Wears a Mask. You're going to hear Agatha Christie at the very beginning of this. Here's Hercule Poirot.
From the thrill-packed pages of Agatha Christie's unforgettable stories of corpses, clues, and crime, Mutual now brings you, complete with bowler hat and magnificent mustache, your favorite detective, Hercule Poirot. In Murder Wears a Mask.
Yes?
I'd like to speak to Mr. Poirot.
Won't you come in? Your name, please?
Richard Fields.
Mr. Poirot's busy at the moment. Please sit down. I'll tell him you're here.
Thank you.
There's some magazines on the table at your left. Mr. Poirot, it's a Mr. Fields.
Eh? Well, he can wait. He's a very patient man. He only rang the bell once. Here, Abigail, I want you to taste this sauce now.
Mmm. Mmm, it's good.
Good? Oh, ma foi, Abigail, it is superb. There are only three people in the world who know how to prepare this sauce. And you are about to become the fourth. Now, you take two tablespoons...
Keith, there's someone waiting.
Ah, oui, Monsieur Fields, eh? Eh bien, I suppose we must see him. Come.
Mr. Fields, this is Mr. Poirot.
Oh, how do you do?
Bonjour, monsieur. Well, it must be an important matter which calls you away from your business at the moment when it is most active.
Well, as a matter of fact, I don't recall mentioning my business.
But it was not necessary, monsieur. The Journal of Wall Street in your pocket tells me you are a stockbroker. Since it is only now 3 o'clock, it is obvious you left your office shortly before the closing of the exchange.
Oh.
Now, you would not do this for a minor matter.
Oh, you're right. I've come to you on a matter that affects me very deeply. It concerns my daughter's welfare.
Uh-huh.
You see, Mr. Poirot, she's quite young, not quite 18. And at that, she's rather immature for her age.
Yes, monsieur, but let us come to the point, please. I have a sauce cooking, important business waiting for me.
Well...
Now, what is the young lady's difficulty?
She met this ham actor when he went up to her school to address the Dramatic Society. He's still quite distinguished-looking in a dissolute sort of way, and she promptly became infatuated with him. It's partly his reputation, I guess. He's been a matinee idol for 20 years.
Well, that seems very normal behavior for a young girl of her age.
Yes, but the horrible part of it is that he became equally interested in her. Why, the man's old enough to be her father. Oh, you must have heard of him. His name...
Wait, monsieur, please. I should prefer to hear all the facts before you mention any names. I never like to engage in idle gossip.
This is no gossip, I assure you. I was up at this... at this man's apartment only an hour ago. He was showing my daughter a necklace he had bought her as a wedding present.
Alors, monsieur, he woos her with diamonds. It is not illegal.
In this case, Mr. Poirot, it's immoral. She's too young to see through him.
Uh-huh. But why do you come to me?
I want you to help me break up this affair.
Oh, monsieur, what...
The man has led a sordid life. You're an investigator. If you dug around, you could produce proof of some of the things he's done. Proof that even Laura would have to believe.
I'm sorry, monsieur. You've come to the wrong person. My talents, such as they are not available for such enterprises. Good day, sir.
I can afford to pay you well.
Monsieur, no one in the world is rich enough to buy Hercule Poirot. Now, you will excuse me, please. I have important work in the kitchen.
All right. I can't force you to do it, but I want you to know that you're leaving me no alternative.
Eh? What do you intend to do?
Something very simple, Mr. Poirot. And at the same time, very conclusive. Good day.
Come in. Oh, Hackett, you got here fast.
I was worried, Mr. Tremaine. This is the first time you've ever called me back on my day off.
I suppose that's a pretty reckless thing to do to a valet these days.
No, sir, just startling. Is anything wrong?
I'm afraid so. You ever seen this before?
Why, yes, sir. It's the jewel case you had out this morning. I gathered it contained a pearl necklace which you bought for Miss Fields.
Yes. $10,000 necklace. A wedding present.
Yes, sir.
Open the box, Heck.
They're very lovely, sir.
Are they?
Oh, yes, sir. Very lovely.
Hackett, you're a liar.
I beg your pardon?
You're a liar. You know perfectly well these are not real pearls.
Mr. Tremaine, surely you're jesting.
You've made a mistake, Hackett. You thought I was a complete fool, didn't you? You waited till Laura and I left for the theater at 2 o'clock and then substituted these cheap, cultivated pearls for the real ones, hoping I'd never find out until it was too late.
I couldn't do that, sir. The pair of pearls were in the safe, and I don't know the combination.
Who put them in the safe?
I did. You asked me to.
But I didn't ask you to leave the safe open, did I? I remember now that I didn't hear you twirl the knob. What did you do with those pearls?
I never touched them.
Very well. Give you your chance. Now I'm turning you over to the police.
Don't touch that phone, Tremaine.
Oh, you cheap, bungling thief posing as a valet. I should have realized what a bad performance it was. Well, I'm sure your experience will come in handy in prison.
Drop that phone, Tremaine.
Get your hands off me.
All right, Tremaine, you asked for it.
What are you... Put down that knife. Put down that... No!
Exit, Mr. Tremaine.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Fields.
Yes.
This is Archie Tremaine. Right here at my place.
You filthy swine. I told you this afternoon I wouldn't have her seeing you.
Well, I don't see how you can stop her. We're getting married tonight.
Married?
Yes. We'd like to have your blessing. Why don't you come down?
I wouldn't come down. Yes. Yes, maybe I will. Sure. I'll give you my blessing, Tremaine. Wait for me. I'll be down in 20 minutes.
Don't worry. I'll be here. And so will the police.
Inspector Stevens, I tell you, the next time we have dinner together, it will be in a place without a telephone. Then I will be certain at least we can finish our dessert without interruption.
And here we are. This is the place. You could have stayed and finished your dessert, Poirot. I didn't take you by force.
It is the same thing. Why, you very slyly tell me you have received an anonymous call reporting a murder. Lord, you know I cannot resist such a situation. He has excellent taste, this Monsieur Archie Tremaine. Me, I like very much these brownstone houses.
Nobody home. Place is dark. We're probably on a wild goose chase.
But the door, it is open. Oh. And the light switch, I presume, is here. So,
And now?
Well, we better start looking around just to make sure. Now, let's try the library first. It should
be. There's no doubt down this hall here. All these brownstones, you know, they are very much the same. Yeah. Inspector, flash your light around, please, eh?
All right.
Uh-huh. Use the switch. Shut up.
Tremaine. Tremaine. Yeah, he's dead all right. Stabbed through the heart.
Stabbed once, Inspector, with that letter opener.
He must have dropped on the spot. There's no other blood around, just that one big pool he's lying in.
And these bloody footprints all over the floor.
They must be the murderer's, Poirot. He stood over the body to make sure Tremaine was dead and didn't notice that the blood was oozing around his shoes. Then he went over to the desk here, maybe to make a call, then into the bathroom to wash his hands. He came out, headed for the door, and...
What, Inspector?
Footprints stopped suddenly. I don't get this.
Inspector, have you observed this newspaper? Half the front page is torn off.
You think the murderer dried his shoes with it?
No, Inspector. I believe this is what happened. He did all the things you have described. Then, when he reached this point where the footsteps stopped, he realized that his shoes were bloody. Well, he could not go out wearing such shoes, and he could not carry them in his hands. Now, he looked down, and voila! He sees another pair of shoes. Fine, clean shoes, free of any blood.
Where?
On the feet of the dead man.
You mean these shoes belong to the murderer?
But obviously. They are covered with blood, and the laces are open because the shoes are a trifle too small.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the murderer put on the dead man's shoes, he finds they are too large. So, he tears a part of the newspaper and stuffs it into the shoes in order that he may walk with more comfort.
By Jove, Poirot, I believe you're right.
Now all you have to do is to find the owner of these shoes.
We'll try it through checking the manufacturer's code number.
Wait, perhaps I can make the task easier, Inspector. I think you will find that the owner of these shoes is a stockbroker named George Feeds.
Now look, Poirot, this is too much. You've been working your little gray cells overtime. How can you...
No. I will explain, mon ami. I will explain. You will notice that the heel of the right shoe is worn down considerably more than the left. Earlier today, this Monsieur Fields, who limps rather badly, came to see me. He uttered dire threats against someone who fitted the description of poor Monsieur Tremaine. So you see, Inspector, I employ the sharp eyes and the ears rather than the little gray cells. And they tell me that you had better question this Monsieur Fields at once.
His gray cells were telling him it was not fitted correctly. Lisa, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if I could get a job playing this character.
I was thinking, you sound really good.
In the gray cells.
Wait, yeah. That's Scottish. What are you talking
about? What about Clouseau, Inspector? We should do a radio series on Inspector Clouseau. Inspector Clouseau.
I would like a room.
Does your dog bite? No? I thought you said your dog did not bite. It's not my dog. Remember that?
You could do it.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And how about, is there any massage for me? Remember that one?
Yeah.
There is.
Would you memorize the whole
movie? Those are the funniest, honestly, those may be some of the funniest movies ever made. Blake Edwards, great, amazing director, writer, creator. He created a lot of these radio shows, you know that?
Yeah, he did.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective, was one of the shows he created. Yeah. Blake Edwards directed all those Inspector Clouseau movies. But, of course, who could play that part other than Peter Sellers? I know that Steve Martin did it.
Yeah.
But it was possibly you. And I love Steve Martin. I mean, I just think he's phenomenal. But nobody can play Inspector Clouseau like Steve Sellers. Peter Sellers. Did I say Steve Sellers?
Yeah.
Peter Sellers. Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks, Esmeralda. We are broadcasting from the luxurious Allstate Skyline Studio, huh?
There you go.
Lisa.
See, he's listening.
I'm not good at doing two things at once. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm pressing all these buttons and doing all these different
things.
There's
a lot you have to do.
There's a lot going on here. I'm having to multitask, and I am not good at that.
Well, luckily for you, Shantae's pushing all the buttons, so you don't have to.
I do kind of
push some buttons.
Yes, you do. You push my buttons.
Yeah. And so you yesterday said the Allstate Skyline Studio. That was the first time I heard that. I didn't know that that's what this was called.
Well, you clearly don't listen to WGN during the day.
No, I do, but I don't hear stuff like that.
I know
I just,
you
I
don't.
I tune that out.
I know.
It's like, what?
That's why you have me.
Well, when you
okay.
said it, I was kind of like, what did she just say?
Yeah.
So it's the Allstate Skyline Studio.
Yeah, here we are.
And it is pretty magnificent.
It is.
I'll tell you that. It is really something. You know, it's like it goes on and on and on. We were walking around. We were giving Dan Jaffe and Dave Weiske.
We got lost.
A tour. We literally got lost.
We could not find the green room. We walked back and forth.
It just goes on and on.
We just keep walking.
And we have lockers.
We're kind of excited. We got our combinations.
We have a locker.
Lisa has a locker,
and I have a locker.
I'm going to buy a shelf for our locker.
I'll buy it.
You don't want a shelf.
You have your own locker.
I know.
You can do whatever you want to your locker. Don't touch my locker.
I won't touch yours.
Don't put anything in my locker.
I'll keep mine
but
to myself.
But I did give Lisa my combination because I'll probably lose it.
Probably. Yeah.
And so we each have a locker. I'm pretty excited about it. I took a picture of it.
I know.
Sent it to everybody.
Good. Yeah. We'll put our headphones in there.
I'm like, I have arrived. I have a locker at WGN.
I think that's good.
You know? All right, let's listen to the conclusion now to Hercule Poirot.
Well, Poirot, you were right. We've got Fields here at headquarters under lock and key. He's our man, all right. He was trying to burn Tremaine's shoes when we called on him.
You are sure he is the guilty man, eh?
Of course. He tried to tell us some cock and bull story about getting a call from Tremaine and finding him dead when he got there. Says he got his shoes all bloody before he saw the body, and then he became panicky and changed them. Just as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the killer, all right. You said yourself he threatened Tremaine. It's an open and shut case.
Myself, I always mistrust the open and shut cases. Tell me, what of the anonymous telephone call you received?
The way I figure it, Poirot, Fields called us himself, and then he thought maybe he could beat the rap, so he wiped off all his fingerprints, changed shoes with the dead man, and ducked.
Oh, a very intelligent reconstruction, Inspector. Very intelligent. Hello, I must return to my office now. If anything new develops...
I'll let you know.
Good, good. Bonjour, Inspector.
Mr. Poirot.
Oh, Mademoiselle Fields.
Mr. Poirot, may I please talk to you for just a moment?
Oh, but of course. I know how distraught you must be. Here is a bench in the corridor. I don't think we will be disturbed here.
Thank you.
Mademoiselle, let me assure you of my great sympathy. If there is anything I can do...
There is, Mr. Poirot. You can prove my father is innocent.
Oh, that would be extremely difficult, Mademoiselle. All the evidence seems to point to his guilt.
Well, I don't care about the evidence. He didn't do it. He couldn't.
He was in my office, Miss Fields, and he threatened to take desperate measures.
He lost his head, but he didn't mean what he said.
And he was there in Monsieur Tremaine's apartment about the time of the murder. He admits this.
Well, of course he admits it. He has nothing to hide.
But at first, Mademoiselle, he did deny it. And the exchange of shoes, the removal of the fingerprints. All these do not seem to be the acts of an innocent man.
Mr. Poirot, he was trapped. Someone lured him down there and planted the evidence to convict him.
That is what he tells us, and I will not say it is impossible, you know, but there must be proof.
Don't worry, I'll find it somehow. George will help me.
George? Oh, that is Monsieur Hackett, eh?
Yes, Archie's valet. He knew a lot about Archie. He's downstairs now talking to the detectives. I'll go and get... Oh, here he comes. George! George!
I beg your... Oh, the Stevens. How are you?
George, this is Mr. Poirot, the great detective.
Well, how do you do, sir? I've heard of you, of course.
Enchanté, monsieur. I have heard fine things about you, too.
Oh, thank you.
George, you've got to help me find the murderer.
Well, Miss Fields...
Go on, say it. You think my father's guilty.
No, I won't say that, but I don't see how I can help you.
Well, did Mr. Tremaine have any enemies? Anyone who hated him?
Enemies? I don't think so. Of course, there were many people who disliked him.
Why, monsieur?
Well, frankly, sir, he was rather an egomaniac. He couldn't stand being in the background for a minute. It was always top billing for Archie Tremaine. But as I told the police, I can't think of anyone who'd want to kill him.
Well, maybe some woman who was jealous about the necklace.
The necklace?
Yes, the pearl necklace he was going to give me.
You were there, George, when he showed it to me that afternoon.
Oh, yes, miss. I heard some conversation about it. Of course, I didn't see it.
Mr. Poirot, the police found the necklace, didn't they? Matched pearls with a small diamond clasp.
No, mademoiselle, I do not believe so. I myself saw everything that was found in the house, but this is the first I have heard of a necklace.
Oh.
Monsieur, I hope you will not be offended if I ask about your movements on the day of the murder.
That was the first thing the police asked me, Mr. Poirot. It was my day off. I left Mr. Tremaine's apartment shortly after he did and spent the rest of the day and the whole evening with my parents.
Oh?
I do that every week on my day off.
I see, I see. Your parents, they live here in this city, huh?
Yes, of course. They share a flat with me.
Mm-hmm. Eh bien, I was merely curious, you know. Mademoiselle, I do not know where this matter of the necklace may lead us, but it gives one furiously to think. What say you, Monsieur Hackett?
I think Miss Fields has brought up something important. Something very, very important. Now listen, you two. You live with me, do you understand? The date was April 5th, Thursday, and I was here all evening.
Were you, George? That's interesting.
I don't like your tone, Daisy.
And I don't like getting the short end of the deal all the time.
What? What is this, Peter? Hold up.
No, Hackett, I wouldn't say that, but we do all the dirty work as a rule, and you get most of the dough.
Well, this time I've done all the dirty work. And you just have to be smart. That little chubby Frenchman or Belgian or whatever he is doesn't look like much, but don't let his accent and that phony-looking mustache fool you. It's going to take great acting to make him believe that you are my parents.
And it's going to take a great deal more money to make us try it. We don't want to...
All right. I'll double your share on this job, but watch yourself. That may be him now. I'll wait in the next room. Just in case.
No rough stuff, Hackett. Now, we'll handle it with kid gloves.
Yes? Bonjour, madame. My name is Poirot, Hercule Poirot. May I have a few words with you?
Well, yes, come in.
What is it, Mama?
A gentleman, Pa. Man named Pearl.
Yes, and my secretary, Miss Thatcher.
How do you do?
Howdy. Excuse my shoes being off. We wasn't expecting any callers.
Oh, no. Do not be deranged, monsieur. We will be here only a few moments.
Will you have some cherry cordial, sir? I made it myself.
Madame, you are too kind. No, I wish only to ask a few questions about your son.
George, what about him?
Well, you know, I presume that his late employer was found murdered.
Oh, yes, poor Mr. Tremaine. A kinder man there never was. Every Thursday, George would come around and talk about nothing but his wonderful Mr. Tremaine.
Every Thursday, madame?
Yes, sir, his day off.
Tell me, on April 5th, the day of the murder, he was here that day, too, huh?
Why, what do you mean, Mr. Poirot? Of course he was here.
All day?
From about 2:30 on. He was teaching us to play gin rummy. Do you play gin rummy, miss?
No, I'm not very good at cards, and I don't drink.
Tell me, madame, where is your son now?
I believe he's over at Mr. Tremaine's place, straightening things up, you know.
I see. Eh bien, you've both been very kind.
Oh, must you go so soon?
I said it would only be a moment. Come, Abigail.
Well, I'm sorry George wasn't home. We'll tell him you were here.
Yes, yeah. Bien, madame.
Lovely old couple, aren't they? I don't see how their son could do anything wrong.
I do not see how he can be their son.
What?
Did you not observe, Abby, that the kindly old gentleman and his wife, they both have fair hair and blue eyes.
Yes.
But Monsieur Hackett, his eyes are dark brown. It is impossible, Abigail, for two blonde, blue-eyed parents to have anything but blue-eyed children.
May I help you, sir?
Oh, yes, if you don't mind. I am interested in a necklace which you recently sold to a Mr. Archie Tremaine.
Really? May I ask what your interest is?
Oh, my name is Hercule Poirot. I would like
Hercule Poirot, the brilliant Belgian detective.
Oh, monsieur, I am flattered. Most people take me for French. Oh,
we've heard of you, the diamond people in Antwerp. They speak your name with reverence.
Well, thank you. Now, about this necklace.
Oh, yes.
You did sell a necklace to Monsieur Tremaine, eh?
Yes, a very fine pearl necklace. See, it was delivered to him on April 3rd.
April 3rd. 2 days before he was murdered. Yeah, this puts a new light on everything.
How so, Chief?
Well, the motive, Abbe. If the motive was robbery, Monsieur Fields is clear. He himself is very wealthy. He would not kill for jewels.
But it's gone, Chief. Who took it?
I do not know, Abbe. But when we find the person who has the necklace, we will have the murderer.
In that case, Mr. Poirot, you'll have to arrest me.
Eh?
You?
I have the necklace right here. Mr. Tremaine returned it on, let me see, on April 5th, last Thursday.
Monsieur Tremaine himself returned it?
Yes, Mr. Poirot. He bought it on the understanding that he could return it within 10 days. He walked in here last Thursday, said he'd changed his mind about the lady and the necklace.
And you refunded his money?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we gave him the cash. It was just after 3, and the banks were closed. He said he was leaving town that night.
Well, there you are, Chief. That brings Mr. Fields right back into the picture.
Monsieur, you are quite certain that it was Archie Tremaine who was here.
Positive. Well, his picture was in the papers every other week. Imagine everybody knew what Archie Tremaine looked like. The silver hair, the monocle.
No, no, then it must be so. Come, Abigail. There is still one small matter about which I must satisfy myself.
Where are we going, Chief?
To the library, Abbey, to do some research.
The library? What do you expect to find there?
The biography of a murderer.
Why, Miss Fields, this is a surprise.
Hackett, I had to come here to Mr. Tremaine's house. I had to come and see for myself. Is there anything...
I'm terribly sorry, miss. I've gone through all of Mr. Tremaine's belongings, and there's not the slightest clue, not the slightest suggestion that anyone else could have killed him.
It's horrible. Horrible. They've indicted him, Hackett. They're going to try my father for murder.
Yes, I know.
They were about to let him go because of that missing necklace,
and then they found out that it had been returned.
I can't understand it. I can't believe that Archie returned it. We were going to be married. It was all agreed.
Well, miss, your father was so set against it that perhaps...
Oh, no, that would have made Archie more stubborn. If I could... Wait. I just thought of something. What time was that necklace returned?
A little after 3, according to the jeweler. At least that's what the papers say.
A little after 3?
Yes, miss.
But that's impossible. Oh, why didn't I think of it sooner? It's impossible, Hackett, because Archie was with me at the theater from 2:30 until 5. He couldn't have been at the jeweler's.
You must be mistaken, miss.
Oh, no, no, I'm not.
The necklace was returned.
Well, then someone else returned it. Someone else returned it and got the money for it.
But no one had access to it except Mr. Tremaine.
Well, no one but Mr. Tremaine. And you.
Me?
You, Hackett. You had access to the necklace and you knew my father had threatened Archie. You're the murderer.
Sit very quietly, Miss Fields. I don't want to shoot you unless I have to.
You killed him. You stole the pearls and you framed my father. I'm going to call the police.
No, you don't. Tremaine tried that. Now he's dead. No, that won't do either. The door is locked. I locked it as you came in.
Get away from me. Get away!
I'm sorry, my dear. Now I'll just gag you so that you're not tempted to scream again. There we are. Now. Hello, Daisy. I have a little job for you. No, it's not as hard as the other one. Doesn't require as much talent. Is that laundry wagon still available? It is. I'll have Pete drive it down here to Tremaine's place. I'll have a bundle ready for him. Pete. Oh.
Bonjour, Monsieur Hackett. May we come in?
Why, the place is topsy-turvy, Mr. Poirot. I'm in the middle of packing.
Good, good, good. I may be of some help to you. You know, I have a very orderly mind. Come, Abigail. Hey,
Oh, but monsieur, this is not the middle of the packing. It is barely the beginning.
Yes, the other rooms are all done. I've left this one for the last.
And after this room is packed away...
The curtain will ring down on Archie Tremaine.
Ah, oui. You phrase it so well. Of course, there is still the small matter of punishing the murderer.
Yes, I know. You know, I feel sorry for him.
For whom?
For Mr. Fields. He's not really a murderer. I mean, say, he's not the criminal type. He was driven to do what he did.
Oh? You know, that is very interesting, Monsieur Hackett. Very interesting. I see that you are quite a student of criminology.
Well...
Come, my friend. Do not be so modest. You have many accomplishments.
Have I?
But of course. For example, I would suggest that you have at one time been an actor.
What?
Do not leap so, Monsieur. Look, you frighten my secretary. She has dropped your glove.
Hmm? Oh, yes, my glove.
You startled me, Mr. Poirot. I didn't think that anybody would remember me. I gave up the theater some years ago.
Au contraire, monsieur. I do not remember you. I never saw you. But you still use the expressions of the theater. Did you not say, Monsieur Tremaine always wants top billing? You see? Tell me, what was your thought on the stage? Impersonations, n'est-ce pas?
I did some impersonations. Why?
No, I was merely wondering if your experience as an actor could have something to do with this case.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Well, by a strange coincidence, monsieur, this case involves a very clever impersonation.
Really? Oh, that's the back door.
You're expecting a delivery, huh?
No, it must be the laundry wagon. I'm sending out all the soiled stuff.
Wait, Monsieur Hackett. I will go with you.
You will... What?
I will go with you. I have a tremendous interest in this laundry.
Why, there's no need for you to go. The bundle is already at the back door.
Nevertheless, I should like to see it. You know, I have developed an overwhelming curiosity about the laundry ever since I picked up this glove from the floor.
Glove?
Oui. One solitary, unaccounted-for lady's glove. It was careless of you, Monsieur Hackett, to leave it lying about. You were much more methodical when you did away with Archie Tremaine.
What? You don't know what you're talking about.
I assure you, my friend, I know precisely what I'm talking about. You are a thief, Monsieur Hackett. You have been one since you gave up the acting 5 years ago. Ah, yes, monsieur, I looked it up. You have plied your trade by posing as a valet or butler and stealing from your employer when the opportunity presented itself. In this case, the opportunity came on the day you saw the necklace Monsieur Tremaine had bought for Miss Fields. You stole the necklace and went to the jeweler's impersonating Tremaine and received the cash for it.
Why, you're mad.
Unfortunately, Monsieur Tremaine found you out the very same day. He threatened to call the police, so you killed him. And then a delicious thought occurred to you, monsieur. The thought of implicating an innocent man. So you called the police to tell them of a murder. That was a mistake, monsieur. That was when I started to believe...
All right, Poirot. You're clever, but you talk too much. I guess Pete will have two more bundles to take with him. Okay, Pete.
Pick him up, Hackett.
But I thought... Where's Pete?
Don't worry. We've got him nice and safe in a patrol wagon. Right where you'll be in just a minute.
You see, monsieur? Your goose is boiled.
Agatha Christie's Poirot is directed by Carl Eastman. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
There you have it. That's Hercule Poirot, May 3rd, 1945, Murder Wears a Mask.